again back here at the Mellow Mushroom on another Monday, but this is actually a special edition of End Zone, one I've actually been looking forward to. There's some really good topics we're going to get into here. I'm joined again by Mr. Haywood Hill. Good to see you again.
Thank you for having me.
And, you know, we've been going back and forth about a lot of these topics and everything. But before we get into those, we do have to say we are at the Mellow Mushroom again in Hiram. Check out mellowmushroom.com to find the locations near you. They got great pizzas, salads, all kinds of beers on draft and in bottle, and a full bar now. Find your local Mellow Mushroom for some great food and a good time. But the reason we are here today is from some very big issues that as we said before, aren't just football issues. These are issues that are in any office, any workplace, things everybody's starting to deal with, these barriers and things people are coming through. We will get into the Dolphins and the Wells report a little bit, but first we're going to start with Michael Sam out of Missouri, defensive end, currently at the Combine, or I guess he's done for now, but he said he has recently came out and said that he is gay. Once he's drafted, because I do believe he's going to be drafted, he will be the first openly gay or lesbian in that professional parameter. And so far, we think he's got good motives. But, you know, what's your take on just the overall news of everything?
Well, first of all, you have to commend the young man on taking on something as large as this.
And to be the first, that's a lot of courage.
It took a lot of courage, and you have to commend him for that. Backing up into college and revealing that to his teammates.
Right.
And now moves forward with a professional career. I think that one of the biggest things that you can take from such a situation as this is that he's finding out that it didn't matter as much.
Right.
So coming out, although courageous, doesn't to take away from his ability as a football
right.
player.
Exactly. That, you know, no matter what your orientation is, as far as a lot of the football people are concerned, they're like, that's great. Can you go to the huddle? We need to run the play. They're not trying to mask over it. They're not trying to dig a hole and bury the idea or any of the, you know, any kind of thing that he could come up with. They're just saying, that doesn't affect what we feel as a football player that you can perform for our team.
And that speaks volumes. 20 years ago, this wouldn't be possible.
Oh, no.
But the fact that he's able to come out, to be comfortable about coming out, but more importantly, he finds that the highest level of the food chain called the National Football League is willing to embrace that
right.
and give him that opportunity. It speaks volumes to where the mindset, whether one agrees or disagrees, the fact that you have policies in place, you have procedures in place, you have laws that protect, and he will get that opportunity to go and fulfill a professional athlete.
Exactly. And he is revolutionary, or he's groundbreaking to a point, because this is going to open the doors for many other sports. I know the Nets in the NBA just recently signed the first openly gay basketball player. And even to them, you know, Jason Kidd, as the coach, used to be a former player, said, this is not an issue to us because we're here to play basketball. We're here to be a winning product. We're here to build the New Jersey Nets into the winning franchise they should be. So maybe, you know, there's been soccer's had a few that's recently been open about orientation and such. Baseball or hockey, do you think those are going to be the next ones, or do you think it's going to be other sports?
Well, it's hard to say right now. The reason why I say that is because we just don't know. With Mr. Sam's coming out,
right?
As courageous as that was, this could very well have a domino effect. I think it probably will have a domino effect in time. So just time will tell us whether or not there are other players, whether they're existing now in the league or those that will be coming to those prospective leagues later. It's just going to be the level of being accepted, and more importantly, just where the leagues themselves and their commissioners take those stance to quickly make it known that this will not be a problem.
Right, that NFL people have said that this doesn't affect how we feel you can perform on a field. You know, the Nets told Jason Collins we're signing you to a 10-day contract because we need your presence. He's a center. They need another center down below. They've had some injury issues the same way the Atlanta Hawks have. And, you know, some games they're dressing 8 or 9 players, which in the NBA is really thin. But overall, they're trying to say that it shouldn't matter to a point. You know, this is a big deal because he will be the first to really, you know, not really carry the flag, but he'll be the first to really show that the door's wide open now. It doesn't matter. And to kids who aren't sure, who are trying to figure out things about themselves, and to the other generations behind them, they can now look and go, I'm going to be accepted in these varieties, you know, in these levels. They can go, it's okay for, you know, it's okay for me to be a gay or a lesbian or to have any sort of different orientation or be different from that guy or that girl and still play, you know, in a professional league of some sort.
I agree. I don't think that the orientation matters. I think that's been proven. I think that the conversations that they've had about it have slowly simmered. And as a matter of fact, you don't even hear anything about it now.
Exactly.
Which lets you know that we have advanced as a society greatly. And our tolerance most definitely has been proven.
Definitely. And I think as a country, not just society, but as a country, I think the USA has done a good job, especially with the Olympics, of showing that our tolerance is still at a high level, and we try to achieve that all the time, that certain things don't matter. But part of the reason you did say, you know, as the weeks progressed since he's came out and told everybody, part of the reason I think people aren't talking about it as much is he didn't really help himself at the combine with a few of the numbers he put up. I want to bash the guy because he seems like a great guy. I've seen bits and pieces of his media interview. He seemed to handle it. Like I told you, I felt like one of the Harbaughs, because they're so good at coaching people on how to deal with it. I feel like one of them sat down at some point and gave him some pointers because he was dead on, probably one of the best of the combine. But you look at his 40-yard dash time, and clearly he plays the same position as Jadeveon Clowney, but we can't compare those two because they're two different type of players for one. But, you know, Jadeveon Clowney was somewhere around 4.4, 4.5 on a 40-yard dash, which is pretty fast for a big guy. It's pretty fast for anybody. But you look at his 40 time, and Michael Sam was a 4.91. I mean, how does that rank compared to the rest of the people he's auditioning with?
Well, the numbers are most definitely tangibles that you use to determine or to not determine where a player will fall on your personal board as an NFL team. The question now is, does that 4.9 translate to the NFL as it has shown and the accolades have been proven with him being defensive player of the year in the SEC? That's where you're going to have to wait and see it in pads and see it in training camp and see it in preseason game and eventually see it into his professional career. The 4.9 was high.
Yeah.
I think it was something that.
Yeah, it was a middle of the pack time with all the other defensive ends, but he's in one of the better conditions as far as shape wise and leanness and, you know, muscle build and all that. He was in pretty good shape. He had shed a few pounds, but that's kind of always been my question. For certain positions, I don't understand some of the combine conditioning they go through and stuff like that and some of the events. So to a pass rusher, is a 40-yard dash that important when trying to figure out who you want to pick?
Well, what the 40-yard dash does, it allows you to see where a player stands at their position with comparable size. It also gives you an opportunity to see when you're looking at the speed of the game, and you're actually clocking it from snap to finish of the play, where those players are positioned at the time the ball is snapped and where the ball finishes. So are they able to make the transition through the pass rush, turn around, go back, and find the football?
Such as Troy Polamalu, who can run on a safety blitz, and even if he misses the ball carrier, can usually catch him within 10 yards.
Correct. So the 40-yard dash gives you an opportunity to see what we call straight line speed. And if that player, according to size, height, weight, is comparable to the players that are now currently playing and those that are going to be playing in the future, is the time matching the speed of the game? That would be the best way to explain the 40. Okay. I think that the L drill gives you a little bit more because now you have to look at change of direction. And although a player can be fast straight, we know that the natural physics of football doesn't allow you just to run straight the whole game.
It's more of a diagonal and a side-to-side game.
Correct.
Yeah, definitely I got to watch a lot of the combine this week. I got to watch a lot of replays most of the time. But overall, I found that I was more intrigued to watch offensive linemen and defensive linemen run the drills because of the emphasis that's put on them. Like the Atlanta Falcons, here, the major local team, that's two of their glaring weaknesses. So I found myself watching that in order to see if I could pick up on something that would make player A and player B completely different from one another. And it's surprising sometimes guys that just can't go side to side or that, the 40 time's a little slower, but it seems to even out in other events.
Yeah, this is true. And I can promise you that this year the offense and defensive linemen are most definitely premier players for the National Football League. I think they have a plethora of receivers. Everybody will get good receivers this year. And the game is just moving that much faster. I mean, I think if my memory serves correctly, there was a lineman that ran like a 4.6.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was official or unofficial time, but to think that a lineman at 300 pounds is running as fast, if not faster, than linebackers who are 50 pounds lighter.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaks volumes as to where the game is going.
Exactly.
It is going to be almost a track meet with huge players and these specimens out on the field making these kind of plays.
Oh yeah, I would definitely never expect Warren Sapp to run a sub-5, and that's another personal Warren Sapp, but I just don't see it. But then you see Jadeveon Clowney and the Michael Sam that are sub-5s, and you're looking to see that, like you're saying, that's the speed of the game. You're finally starting to see the speed of everything.
Correct.
But we will get in. We wish the best for Michael Sam. I hate to put you on the spot, but if you had to pick, one or two teams that you think would be the best homes for Michael Sam, like one or two teams that you feel like it'll just ease right in and he'll have the easiest transition, where do you think those places would be?
Well, I think that,
like I said, I hate to put you on the spot because
it's so difficult to say because there are so many.
It's not that there's any bad locker room, so to say, even though we will hit on one that's got some problems here in a minute. But it's, do you feel like there's a place where he would feel more at home, whether it be he's closer to home or there's a more tolerant place? Like, the first thing that was brought up a lot of times, they said San Diego would be a good home because they took on Manti Te'o last year, and by the end of the season, nobody remembered about his fake girlfriend or about him being duped with some sort of anything like that. Everybody remembered this kid could play once he got on the field.
Well, I mean, again, San Diego very well could possibly be a place, but I think what the commissioner has done, and he's done a great job with this, is basically saying that wherever you decide to go, it's going to be a good locker room. And I'm going to reassure that with what we have in place as far as the policies of the National Football League. So it's yet to be seen what's going to take place when the door closes.
Right.
But we do know right now at least the doors are open.
Right.
So we have to just wait and see what team takes him on. At that point, what that team does to build a level of comfort around him in that locker room, those teammates, how they support him, and then how he shines on the big stage on Sundays.
And, we even kind of went over making a case for him having a home with the team we're about to talk about, and that would be the target of the Wells report and the whole reason that Mr. Wells was busy in the last few months, the Miami Dolphins, and clearly the bullying, for lack of a better term, that happened between a handful of people. It wasn't just Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. There were other people that were doing the bullying tactics and getting in on it. And there was, I believe, 5 or 6 other people total that were the targets of some of these things. But, we'll get into how we think Michael Sam could be a Dolphin. But let's get into that Wells report and how interesting it was. I know we had the conversation on Saturday a little bit as I was perusing it, and there's a website you can go to, www.nfldolphinsreport.com. That's nfldolphinsreport.com. It is the official website of the Wells Report. Any press release that was released about it, anything Mr. Wells said, anything he conducted, and his entire report, the same one Roger Goodell got, is on that website. And it was very interesting.
I can tell you that Mr. Wells did a phenomenal job. It's a 200-page document. Yeah. So that means there were a lot of interviews conducted. He made sure that he did everything with a fine-tooth comb. He put it under a microscope. He evaluated, and he documented what was there. Now, what does that say for the National Football League? It says that Mr. Goodell, again, took the high road. He did not try to sweep it under the rug. He brought in independent study. He clearly wanted to get to the bottom of this. And again, we're talking about a corporate environment. Although this corporation is called the National Football League, its employees are players, there are still policies and procedures that are in place. And as with any policy, procedure, or law, normally the grassroots and or the birth of that is because something is happening. So paying it forward, something has happened in the past that created this policy with inside the National Football League for this very purpose. Mm-hmm. Now we must look at the evidence, be it that it may, take a hard look at what was said, see where this had expanded itself beyond just Mr. Cognito and Mr. Martin, mm-hmm. and move forward with what now facts.
Right. And like you said, you know, I've always applauded the efforts of Roger Goodell. Even when I don't agree with things he's done, I felt that from Bounty Gate all the way up to this now, he's had some pretty rough things happen with him in charge. And to me, he tries to be proactive to make sure it doesn't happen again. He's like, this happened on one franchise. I don't want the other 29 to deal with it, and that one's not going to have this problem either. Like you said, he goes back, and he's getting the outsourced. He didn't just do this because he didn't want to deal with it. He wanted to make sure that it was an unbiased report to tell him exactly what happened so that everybody in the world can look and see exactly what happened and how we can prevent this down the road. You know, like I said, we have all these future generations behind us that are playing sports, and, you know, you have really nice sons and everything, and you can tell they've been brought up right. You and your wife have done a great job with that.
Thank you.
That I would never suspect them to be this part of it because you've taught them the right way. But, you know, sometimes things fall through the cracks and maybe you don't grasp a concept or maybe it's never taught to you. If as adults we can't, you know, really wrangle in bullying, which is almost a basic offense to a point. It can escalate out of control, but if we can't take care of a basic thing like bullying, how can we instruct the people behind us, the future generations, to lead the country?
I agree. Here's the problem with bullying. And let's take it to its level of infancy, okay? Let's take children today in school. More especially, let's say elementary school. Where the social environment is very, very important. It is at all levels, but more importantly for you to be my friend.
Right.
Now, when you have elementary school children who are dealing with a two-sided coin. On one side of the coin, if they do tell, they're considered snitching, mm-hmm. is the term.
Or so, soft at some point, you know.
So they're an outcast in that aspect. On the other side of this, if they choose to house this and the kid becomes explosive because of all of the pressure or depressed, then we have another animal on the other side of the coin. So now, bullying from that perspective makes it hard for you to tell, and if you do decide to retaliate or take matters in your own hand, you can become a felon.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, even in the National Football League, do they usually penalize the antagonist? No. The retaliator typically gets the penalty.
Correct.
And a lot of people, including Mr. Incognito, I've noticed a few times, will antagonize somebody enough to where when they finally retaliate, he just throws his hands up. And, I mean, I'm not trying to pick on Richie. I think deep down, he really is a good guy, that this just got too out of hand. He went beyond the line that he was going to try to draw on it and couldn't find his way back.
I agree. I think that it was all part of something that was designed possibly to track, trace, or give a starting point to the to what might have been questioning the toughness of Mr. Martin. I don't think that it, by any means he's not a tough football player, I'm sorry, and he's most definitely proven himself to be in the National Football League. He's smart. But at what point can a prank be taken too far?
Exactly.
And that's where my concern is, because again, you look at this, graduating it from its infancy stages of children in elementary school to where you see it a little more serious now in middle school and most definitely serious in high school. I mean, there are events in our history that we can point to show where at the end of the day, if you go back and peel back the layers, these were kids that were loners. These are kids that people didn't really like, or these were easy or perceived as easy targets. And so what happens when that kid says today is the final day? So that's why I commend Mr. Martin by not retaliating and taking into consideration there's something in place for this. Now some will agree and some will disagree, but if you're working for a company and you're outside of this environment and what I like to call the real world,
yeah,
where you're in a 9-to-5, what do you do with that? I mean, what happens with that? And why is it there if it's not a problem?
Right.
So that goes back to what I said earlier about why laws, policies, and procedures are created in the infrastructuring of not only our society and our country, but in Fortune 500 and just companies in general. Because something has happened consistently enough over time to where it had to be implemented.
Yep. You know, and to go back to Jonathan Martin not being a soft player or a soft person, he did follow the policy procedures, but even on the field, he was a very effective blindside blocker for a majority of the season. Now, they did trade with Baltimore, I believe, and picked up another tackle, to which they move into Martin's position, move Martin to the right side of the line. It was not a demotion. It was because he's so good at the left side, we need more help on the right side of the thing. And a lot of people thought it was a demotion, but even Wells comments in the actual report that this was because that was the dire need. That was the hole in the boat that they're trying to fix. You can only bail water for so long. They got the other guy who was only, he's more effective on the left side, where Martin is almost a flip tackle. He can go either direction. I think he could really play any of the five positions on the line. And I thought it was important that Wells made light of that in bringing in somebody else, it was to make their line better. It wasn't to punish Martin.
Absolutely. I mean, when you got a player that has his ability, he was a high draft pick, it proves that there's a science to what you do in drafting players.
Exactly.
And to have the luxury of being able to move Mr. Martin to either side of the line, offensive line, spoke volumes of his ability. I don't think, in my personal opinion as a coach, a soft player can, for the lack of better terms.
Right.
I mean, he has to have natural ability. He has to feel comfortable. He has to be knowledgeable of what's going on with the play calling. And at any given time that you felt that you're in a game full of matchups, and at any given time that the right side, you feel that you're getting beat on the left, you can just easily and conveniently move this player to that side.
Exactly. And, you know, something they may definitely have to deal with next year is, you know, let's take a team like the Houston Texans, since they have the first overall draft pick. They have J.J. Watt on one side, who is a beast all unto himself. Now, the rest of their line is pretty good, too, but he's the star of that league, or of that particular, of that line. What if they draft Jadeveon Clowney? And so you have Jonathan Martin on one side, and he's taking care of J.J. Watt, but Clowney's bum-rushing the other side. You're going to have to go, wait. Who would we rather deal with here? Do we have somebody that we can at least neutralize? He doesn't have to beat J.J. Watt. Can he neutralize what this big guy's going to do so that we can move Martin, our stronger tackle, to take care of Clowney and neutralize him? Because I don't know if you're going to be able to stop him, but that's an entire different podcast we can have. But overall, I think you're going to need those versatile players, especially with the indoor leagues and stuff like that. You see a lot of players that play both sides of the ball for various reasons.
Right. Well, with that being said, arena football was designed as an Ironman sport. In its infancy and its highlights of its days, golden days, you had to learn how to play both sides of the ball because the roster is too small to carry
exactly
specific players outside of quarterback.
Yeah, they don't have 53 position players. They usually have between, I've seen as small as 18 on some rosters, which is really thin, and I've seen as much as 30 on some rosters.
Correct. And believe it or not, the secret to some of the team's success in the National Football League right now, i.e., the New England Patriots, i.e., the Seattle Seahawks, is they have players that can do more than one thing. And that gives you longevity. That gives you, as a head coach, a place to rest your head at night to think that if we do come up with this scenario, and we trust me, we go over all kinds of scenarios, that we have an answer for it.
Exactly.
And that we're not trying to draw it in the dirt or hope it just falls out of the sky. So you're going to see a lot more of these players transition this way, and they're going to play with a few things to see where they are. But with the rookie contracts being structured the way they are now, it gives general managers, it gives ownership groups, it gives the coaching staff an opportunity to really dig a little bit deeper into their draft pick, and they can feel a lot more comfortable knowing that it's not just the money matters, but how we're going to develop this player and where do we project him 3 years, 5 years from now.
Exactly. The same way the Chicago Bears have had to convert Devin Hester to a return only, where typically you would have another player, whether it be a defensive back, a wide receiver, running back, it could even be a middle linebacker. Whoever you want to return the ball typically is somebody you pull from, you know, the starting 11 of an offense or a defense to play special teams instead of having a specific guy who takes up a roster spot.
Correct.
But we'll hit a few quick notes real quick, and then we'll get into how we're going to tie all this together, because it does have a lot in common. But the few quick notes real quick, the offensive line coach for the Miami Dolphins, Jim Turner, was let go of his duties based off of what the owner of the Dolphins and the general manager, they all got together, they all talked about everything, and they felt it was better to move forward, especially after the Wells report, you know, with Mr. Turner not having his offensive line coaching job anymore. And also one of the athletic trainers, Kevin O'Neill, was also let go. Do you feel it was good to go ahead and let them go, or should they have tried to, you know, say, well, they can take classes, or they can, I guess, do you feel like they fired them just to kind of get it off of them, or do you feel like they felt that was the best alternative?
No, I think the report was the tangible evidence. And I think Mr. Goodell, again, did a great job of allowing the ownership group of the Miami Dolphins to create an action plan. Basically, he allowed this independent study to take place, and then, under his watchful eye, allowed the Dolphins to decide on what they were going to do. He didn't mandate anything.
Right.
He says, here's the information. Read it. Digest it. Create an action plan forward. And so I guess after great deliberation and great thought, loyalty from the organization to the coach and the trainer, as well likewise to those individuals to the organization, the decision had to be made. And I think they were comfortable with their decision.
Yeah, I do feel like Goodell is still going to step in with a little bit of discipline on his own, but I do like you said, that he has allowed the Dolphins to fix this in-house. Without feeling like you got called to the principal's office, you allow the teacher to take care of their own class.
Correct.
And the other note I was going to hit, which is escaping me at the moment, this has been a great discussion. This was, in the Wells report, they make reference to a player A, a player B, a player C. Now, while we don't know who B and C is, it was revealed by the player's agent who player A was. And that would be a reserve who signed his future contract the other day with the Carolina Panthers. He's an offensive tackle as well, which fits right into, he could have been right there with Martin and everybody else, Andrew McDonald. And overall, once it was revealed that way, his head coach, Ron Rivera, made the trip to his mom's place of work to talk to his mom about it. And to me, I felt like that was an over and above that, you know, he could have easily called her. He could have not said a word, but he wanted to know what she knew so he can stop this from happening. If it was just because at one point Andrew McDonald was a Dolphin, but he left and became a Panther, and he was making sure there wasn't an issue there that he needed to address.
Normally where there's smoke, there's fire. Mm-hmm. And you have to commend the coach tremendously of making sure that if that was the case, this residue wasn't going to carry over into his organization. Bullies normally become bullies.
Yeah.
As a result of, and to just to make sure that, and no pun intended on this particular player and making that statement. However, it did give an opportunity for the coach to go in right now and say, hey, let's find out what we need to fix with this now. What damage has truly been done? And if there are things that can arise, or there are indicators that we see in his behavior or what have you, or even in his play, we would have an opportunity to have some firsthand information and make sure that if it's help that's needed from a therapeutic standpoint or even from a coaching standpoint, we'll be in a position to have that information and be able to act upon it readily.
Exactly. And I did finally remember, I found it in my notes what I was going to talk about. But to kind of close up that last point about Mr. McDonald, to me, Ron Rivera, his head coach, going to see his mom, to me was almost a way of saying, I assure you, that's not going to happen in my locker room. That was kind of his way of assuring, you know, seeing if he may need some help or what the damage, but it was his way of saying, that's not going to happen on my ship. And to me, that was a big gesture.
It was.
But the last thing I was going to hit on, I can't believe I almost forgot it. The Wells report included this little tidbit of information that makes this whole thing a little bit more interesting to me. And that's the fact that Mr. Incognito will be a free agent within the next coming weeks. His contract runs out sometime in March of this year. That's just a couple weeks from now. You know, we kind of talked about before, it may be hard for him to continue playing professional football in the football league. Do you feel that he has a chance to stay in the league? And if not, where is a potential landing spot for him?
Well, I think there is a possibility that he can stay in the league. However, it will come with a lot of addendums and attachments. And what I mean by that is because, again, you have a lot of policies and procedures in place to handle such situations, it will now be left up to first, the Miami Dolphins, if they want to re-sign him with some conditions. But more importantly, what Mr. Goodell would do with it from his standpoint now that the investigation has been done, completed, and reported, what does he do with it from a legal standpoint as it pertains to the National Football League? What example does he make out of Mr. Incognito? But not just him, any other player
right.
that might have participated in this, that whether they were part of the process of bullying or the victims being bullied. I think it's going to speak volumes as to how the commissioner handles this, how the team handles this, and moving forward, what the perception is going to be about this.
Right.
So it'll be very interesting to see at the end of the day what's going to come of it.
Yeah, exactly.
When all the smoke clears. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do, you know, at the beginning of this whole thing, and not the beginning of this podcast, but the beginning of first learning about everything, and I guess I was quick on the draw a lot of times. I thought that, you know, Incognito was this big monster, but the more you read, if anything, the Wells report clears up all the gray area for the most part. And he does have a future in this league, and it could be with the Miami Dolphins, who may feel, you know, like you said, there's going to be a lot of conditions where if any of these lines are crossed, you're going to be told where the door is. And in the nicest way possible, like, we're not going to put up with anything from you at this point. Which, you know, there's a lot of players that do have conditions built in. They're not allowed to do certain things. A lot of times it's skydiving or something like that, or they're not allowed to own motorcycles. There's certain things if you have erratic behavior. But I do think Incognito does have a chance in this league. But we did say that Michael Sam could have a potential to be a Miami Dolphin, and that's not through insider information. I don't know anybody in the Dolphins organization. You may, but...
I do not.
Okay. Best say, but, you know, the case we were kind of making for Michael Sam, and you really brought it up pretty well to say that why wouldn't the Dolphins try to say, we would love to draft you, whether it be the first round, the second round, the third round. You know, when it falls to us in the third round, if you're there, we'd like to take you. You shouldn't be gun-shy, so to say. You shouldn't be hesitant about being a Miami Dolphin because we're not the Dolphins that was in that report. That was an isolated incident. We're turning over the new leaf. We're going to be the new Dolphins. And to me, that it could be a possible landing spot, not just San Diego, but Miami could be the spot.
Yeah, Miami, it very well could be. I mean, we've seen stranger things happen when it comes to the draft. Players who thought that they were going to go in certain rounds fall off into the next day.
I always feel bad for the guys that go to the first round and they don't get picked, and they're just sitting there in the room with all their family and friends, and you feel bad. Because a friend of mine years ago was in the NFL draft when he left Clemson, and he knew he would go 5th, 6th, 7th round. So on the third day, he had a small shindig at his house with food, and people were just hanging out and everything, and he goes undrafted. But the biggest thing he did was to grab the microphone from the DJ, you know, politely ask, he didn't snatch or nothing, and he made a speech to everybody that just put it all in perspective. He said, yeah, I didn't get drafted, but three teams want me to show up to their training camp. Here's why they couldn't draft me. Thanks for supporting me, all this stuff here. And he's like, being drafted is not the be-all, end-all. You still have the opportunities available.
Opportunities, if you do not take advantage of them, somebody else will.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest part of his maturity, and you often hear coaches say this, we look at the mental toughness. And I think that spoke volumes to his career.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that although every player wants to be drafted, it's
right.
The dream of every player in probably every sport to be that number one pick or to be drafted high and have all of those things in place or put in place. But the fact that you get that opportunity.
Exactly.
It means more.
Right.
It means more. And you're starting to see that now even with the rookie players in the National Football League, the way they've structured those rookie contracts, mm-hmm. you most definitely now have to come in and show yourself approved.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can get that extension thereafter. Now, most of them will get an extension, but where the decimal point will be moved will speak over your first 3 years in his body of work.
Oh,
and I think
absolutely.
That's more than fair. It's not a one-year done deal, and you had a good year or a bad year. It gives you an opportunity to develop, to play, and then show the consistency in year three. And so I like how the contracts are structured now, and it also gives you an opportunity to reward those veteran players who have shown that consistency 2 to 3 years after
right.
moving forward with the rookie contract.
You know, clearly Russell Wilson's going to have a lot to talk about when he sits down for his new contract.
Absolutely.
You know, a Colin Kaepernick. You know, there will be no more Matt Stafford, Sam Bradford contracts.
Correct.
But it puts more pressure on a running back with, you know, the average running back's lifespan in the NFL, his career-wise, shelf life of about 3 years. But, you know, to tie everything we talked about together here, since it is, you know, it's not just a football issue, it is the social issue. I've told a lot of my friends who don't necessarily follow sports the way I do that this does happen everywhere and that it's something we need to pay attention to because just because the signs are so in your face here, you may not see them at your own workplace. But, you know, given that, no matter what you're doing in life, no matter what environment, what company you work for, even when you work for yourself, being a subcontractor of some kind or anything. My question is, would you rather have a coworker like Michael Sam, Richie Incognito, or Jonathan Martin? In the way they're portrayed by the media is not necessarily a fair assessment of them, but, you know, with Michael Sam, he's being portrayed as an openly gay professional athlete. Richie Incognito is not necessarily the monster they built him out to be, but somebody with some issues he needs to work through as far as not bullying coworkers. And then Jonathan Martin, you know, sometimes people said he was a soft type player with a whistleblower mentality, or would you rather have, you know, really Jonathan Martin, the way we, or the way he come to light to us, was that he's somebody who follows the policies and procedures no matter how bad the situation.
I think that it's difficult to pick amongst the three because I think socially they all are part of us. So to pick one person would be very difficult to do. I think you look at each individual on a case by case and you see where they're measuring up in our society and what is our standard for them. And if they're exceeding that standard, that's what you're looking for.
And I totally agree. This is not a question that wasn't a trick question or nothing like that. I completely agree that, and I'm glad that we always agree on that, that it's not about orientation. It's not about sex. It's not about color. It's not about age. It's professional athletes. It's, you know, tax preparers. It's ditch diggers. We're all the same. We're all equal to some point. Now, there's other laws and things we could get into that make us not so equal sometimes, but overall, to me, all three of these guys should have an equal opportunity to continue to play the game they've grew up loving and they continue to love and want to continue to make differences.
I agree. I think that all of those players, with Mr. Sam coming into the league, with Mr. Martin proving himself, and Mr. Incognito showing himself approved for a number of years, has proven just to show you the differences that you have, but yet the similarities in all of those players. But more importantly, the question is always asked when I talk to young players who leave college. My question normally to them is the first thing I ask them, what's the difference between college and pro? And I'll normally get this perplexed look, and I normally answer it quickly for them by saying, professionalism.
Exactly.
Pro. That's what separates you.
Exactly.
You're no longer an amateur. You're now a pro. Now, whatever level that may be on, but you're a pro.
Exactly. And I look forward to, I do think it's going to be next season where we're going to see Michael Sam is going to be trying to get past Mr. Incognito and Mr. Martin, possibly on the same team, possibly not on the same team. I do think that we are going to see Michael Sam as a I don't know how dominant because I haven't seen a whole lot of his body of work. I do know he has some good numbers, but he always talks about the team game. It doesn't matter if he has a sack or not. It's did the team win? Did we get done what we were trying to get done? But that's going to do it for us on this special edition of End Zone. Once again, I do appreciate you dropping by.
Thank you for having me.
You're always welcome to come back by at any time. Although I should probably go to you more because you stay a lot busier than I do. But for Mr. Hill, I am Jeremy York from End Zone, and we'll see you guys next time.